I'd like to offer a few reflections on the theme. The question this morning about awakening and how it looks in the world, one thing that came to my mind, two things. One is, again, I learned from one of Wendy's teachers, where someone said to the Zen master, what was the Buddha doing during her lifetime? Poetic part. What was the Buddha doing during her lifetime? And the Zen master replied, and you could think of, you know, how you might catalogue that. And the Zen master replied in true Zen style, an appropriate response. Period. That's it. So something about the freedom that's timeless, that doesn't belong to a particular age, responds to its age. And age means the current conditions that you're in. Right? What characterized a Buddha, and just to say in terms of this tradition, Nibbana is considered the complete awakening. There are different stages along the way. But what characterizes a Buddha, as opposed to just any old fully enlightened person, right? What characterizes a Buddha is that a Buddha is an excellent teacher, meaning she or he, that being, that consciousness, can respond according to where each one is. Right? It's not like, oh, here's the teaching, let's all do this today. It's to respond according exactly where that one is. In other words, the heart and mind is so malleable and cultivated that it responds in a really appropriate way. So that could look like anything in our world today. The world is a different place, in a sense. Human issues aren't so different, but we've got them on a different scale, given where we are in our post-industrial or industrialized world. So yeah, I don't know. We look, you know, lots of very awake people that I've met doing all kinds of different work in the world. Maybe some of them are quiet hermits, some of them are teachers, some of them are peace activists, some of them might be in the supermarket for all I know. Really. So a couple more windows into Nibbana. Another word, given that you know probably, is realization. It's another synonym for enlightenment, waking up, realization, to make something real. And I have too many windows to offer for the rest of the afternoon. We don't have so long, but I'll give little highlights of each one. There's a story that goes, that somebody asked Michelangelo, how do you sculpt, or whatever the verb is? How do you sculpt? How do you sculpt an elephant? And he said, you take away everything that isn't the elephant. Like that. It's probably an artist's eye, can see it that way. You take away, you shed everything that's not real, and that the practice is a kind of shedding of what's not true any longer, of what's not real. And and we could use the language of shedding what's false. False isn't a innocent. False is you know when something's not real, don't you? You don't need me to tell you that. We feel it. And the heart, as far as I can see, the heart-mind, as we practice, has a more and more sensitive barometer for knowing the ring of truth. When something is true, we recognize it. The heart rejoices, actually. Whether it's true, and I don't necessarily mean deep any level of truth, any level of truth. Somebody shares something true about them, you realize something true about yourself, someone expresses a deep, great teaching and it feels authentic, someone's in their authenticity in a certain way. Something in us knows it. Something chimes, you know, the ring of truth, we say, that the heart is drawn to. Seems like, tell me if it's not your experience, but the heart, mind, seems to love what is real and more real. There's a kind of rejoicing, even if, whatever level it is, if our truth in that moment is pain, but it's true, we're with it, we're clear. This is how it is right now. It's true, something rejoices. Not for the pain, but for our capacities to stand with what's true. Because when we stand with mindfulness, presence, investigation, kindness, and interest, life can't help but unfold. The pain unfolds itself. The knots in the heart start to untangle when we hold them with that kind of presence. Shedding or realizing, becoming more real, again, isn't something, I use the word becoming, another window to Nibbana. Here's what one of the senior disciples of the Buddha said. He was called Sariputra, and and it says in the text, it says, and the thought, he was in his meditation, and the thought occurred to him, Nibbana is the end of becoming. And he said, then the thought arose a second time, Nibbana is the end of becoming. And then he said, the thought arose a third time, Nibbana is the end of becoming. And he said, and with that, the thought puttered out. The end of becoming. Where does that land with you? Where I am not trying to become someone. Somebody was speaking, and it's a very, very normal and common experience, because when we're not fully awake, we are becoming. We're trying to become, or we're trying to avoid becoming, which is another kind of becoming. So becoming means becoming this person or that person, being a better person, being a someone other than I am, becoming rich, becoming famous, that's the more obvious ones, right? Becoming enlightened, becoming loved, becoming lovable. I'll turn myself into someone who's going to be lovable. The end of becoming, the end of that kind of effort. It's a little bit like the construction one, but for me it has a little bit more, a slight different quality when I think into this one. The end of becoming. No more becoming. No more having to become someone that our mind thinks we should be. Letting go of all those ideal selves. Do you have any of those in your mind? Either physical ideal selves, you know, looking like that. That's a more worldly, obvious one. But the ideal selves of, we can get spiritual ideal selves, of course. What would your one look like? Dream it up, because we probably have them. We don't know, we've taken from people who've inspired us, or ideas we've had, or experiences we've had. You know, you may have had deep experiences that woke you up, and we're trying to become that person again, right? The ending of becoming. I remember this one teacher who I loved. I still love her, actually. In the beginning of my practice, and she was, I really loved her. You know, I just love some people. There's some sort of resonance with her. And she had certain qualities, like, I don't know how I'd characterize them now because I'm looking from a slight different lens, but my mum met her once, and my mum said, even though it was in a Buddhist retreat center, my mum said, oh, she's, you can feel she's really close to God. Right? You know that? Something my mum said. She's really close to God, that woman. Right, there was something sort of, I don't know, whatever my mum saw in that, but there was something I really loved. And so I thought, right, that's who I've got to be. How do I get to be like that? right? And one of my teachers said, as soon as we do that, there's such a lot of self-rejection in it. Even though it's beautiful and she's genuinely inspiring to me, still is. That trying to become something like that, there's a way I'm turning away from my heart. And we feel that pain, actually, if we can let ourselves. Otherwise, there's a reaching. Oh, I just have to do a bit more of that, and I could do what she did. And she had that kind of thing for dinner, or whatever it was. You know, whatever it was, I was young and idealistic as well. But yeah. So he gives the metaphor, my teacher. He said, it's like, imagine you're a mango tree in potential. And there's mango seed there in your heart mind, as your heart mind. He goes, but you want to be a rose. And you go, oh, but I want to be a rose. And the mango tree starts to grow. And it's got quite, I don't know what a mango tree. Actually, they have a hollow stump, don't they? Just forget mango tree. Imagine you're an oak tree in potential, right? But you want to be a rose. And the oak tree starts kind of shaping up. And it's kind of solid and blah. Neaty and, but I want to be a rose. I want to be like that delicate red thing. Can you see the problem? That's becoming. In that case, it's spiritual becoming of wanting certain qualities. We all show up differently. We're so unique. In fact, one of the things that I could say about anyone I've met who feels a little bit awake is that they're really themselves. In a very, you know, they're more and more them. They're more real. They're more vivid in their themness. And I think there are more than some may care to think. So the end of becoming. Yes, we can admire and be inspired. The Buddha in his brilliance pointed to the craving of becoming and the craving for non-becoming. Can be the spiritual version. Have you, any of you ever seen that? Like, oh, I'm so tired of becoming, I'm so tired of trying to be rich, famous, a rose, whatever it is you've tried to be in your life, lovable. So tired of that. I like this Buddhist idea. I don't have to become anything. Right? I'm going to become nothing. Right? And there's a kind of way unconsciously we can pull back from this, taking our seat in this immediate, unvarnished realm where the waking up happens. You know, where we want to slink back away from the pain, but also away from the juice and the beauty and the nobility. We have realization, we have the end of becoming. What are the windows? We have the round window, the square window. Do they have a triangle?
There was a square window. Square, round,
Is there an oval window? Maybe one or two other windows, and then we'll do something else. Okay, so with that chant we did earlier, one of the main definitions, in fact, of Nibbana is the complete cooling out of greed, of hate, and confusion. It's cooled out. It's gone. That fire has. And you might think, well, I'm not greedy or hateful or confused. How dare you? Right. But actually those roots can go really deep, we may not even know our own hatred, sometimes just our contention with things or our scratchy, irritable. I hate that. Or the way that we reject ourselves sometimes. Or the greed of just that hunger that keeps us searching, that hungry heart. Feed me, give me something. Nourish me. Cooling out. gone out of those passions. Oh, thank you. The heat has gone from the passions of greed, hate, and delusion. Yes.
And the danger of falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you need some sort of refuge?
Thank you.
So you can do this?
Thank you very much. It's great you say it, because somebody asked me something similar in there and I wanted to say something to the whole group. Yeah. So the necessity for refuge and orienting and centering ourselves around something is absolutely universal, critical, and wise, right? And the Buddha recognized this. So while freedom may be described as the heart-mind without any supports anymore, without having to do this or that or anything, he says, on the way to that, give yourself things to center around and orient around and support you that are wholesome, ethical, beautiful, uplifting, stabilize and steady the mind. Thank you. So absolutely, it's very clear on the way to freedom we have to orient to skillful, we could say houses, we don't have to become them as such, we will, right? We become the meditator or whatever. But absolutely, so ethics, generosity, all the beautiful human qualities, mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of body, these are wholesome things to center around. Refuge in the tradition with the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, but putting our heart and our faith in awakening and the possibility of that, absolutely, we stabilize around that, and we need it often, many of us, more and more. The more we relinquish some of the old supports of the mind, you know, even the support, the inner support of the thought that keeps saying, oh, I'm really great, everyone likes me, or, you know, whatever it is, that starts to shed. Ooh, okay, what can I rely on? Where can I find my feet? Where can I find what's up and what's down as this deconstruction happens? And it doesn't have to always be a dramatic deconstruction. It can be very, very kind and gentle and soft. Sometimes it's rough. Sometimes it's rough. Rough patches, but I'm really glad you. So yes, wise supports, wise rafters, wise scaffold. In a way, scaffold's a better word. Wise scaffolding. Okay, so that will take me to the last window then. There are many more. Was that enough? Do one window near the end. Should we practice a little bit? Let's see where your energy is for now. Yeah, let's practice a little bit. Okay, I'll do save a window to the end. Stand if you want to stand. I think I might stand. Even actually, although as you know, in practice, it's not always about wanting to. Like what will support wisdom? One of the definitions of wisdom is knowing what's going to support this heart mind right now in a real way. So for the last formal silent period of the afternoon, take your posture, whether it's sitting or standing, and practice as if it was your last opportunity, actually, because the truth is we don't know. It might be. That's not a morbid reflection. That's true. We don't know. Really don't. I think I know. It's like I'm assuming I'm getting on that. Assuming I'm going to meet my little nephew later. loves him. All of that future promise. First time someone in my family's been at Cambridge. All of that. Really, the truth is all I've got. The immediacy helps you, the sense of all we've got is now. One of my teachers once said, practice right now. Actually, that was the walking meditation. It doesn't work for sitting, admittedly. Let's see. Let's sit, let's stand. Yeah, this works. If you knew it was the last 15 minutes for you to taste what it was to be a human breathing. Because there will be that moment. If we know it or not, we may or may not know. To taste this, while this body, while it's still animated, you've ever sat with a dead body or, you know, it's not animated anymore. It doesn't breathe anymore. It doesn't shine anymore. There's nothing looking out of it anymore. That animation has gone. Right now you're animated. The breathing, the sensing, thinking, the feeling. This is aliveness. Sometimes the animations are painful animations. Sometimes they're pleasurable. Breathing with it all. Knowing it all. Hearing the call in the silence to that whisper, the whisper to the so-called deathlessness, to the deathless waking. you're waiting for a better moment than this one, please give it up. Breathe out. Come closer to what may not at first appear to be your doorway to everything you see. you would like, look at it this way. Are you wanting something to be happening right now that's not happening? If so, that's desire. Are you wanting something to stop happening right now that is happening right now? Pain, feeling. Right? Want it to be over. You're wanting something to be stopping happening that is happening right now. That's aversion. And the last one, if you don't know if something is happening or not happening right now, that's delusion. The mind can lose its crispness and start to fade away. I'm not judging any of those, just seeing them. Breathing out. Breathing in. And for the last few minutes of this formal period, letting yourself spread out a little bit into your limbs, if you haven't yet. The legs, the backside, the space around your back. Let the body breathe as if you had gills at your sides. As if the ribs at the back could breathe. As if your temples and your skull were like little open cat flaps. Completely soft, movable. Widening and softening to take up the fullness of your physical presence. The belly having enough room. Letting the breath be wider. Not placing any or imposing any limitation on what a breathing body feels like. What it can show you if you let it. In one moment of giving up your struggle with reality. Whatever it's presenting. Including your struggle and widening, softening. See where the quietness of the afternoon takes you right now. this next very short period of between 5 and 10 minutes. To stand, to move, to walk, to potter, to wander aimlessly in this room, whatever you want to do. But with the framework, with the reference, how would you attend right now to your body if you knew? Here's the bit I was going to share earlier. If you knew that in 10 minutes, a big lorry was going to come and put a big hose through here and fill this room up with concrete, right? And we would still be here. Right? Lovely thought. Terrible thought. The point of the thought is to move in the same, it's the same as a death reflection in a sense, move with that real, well, whatever it would be, how would you move? Knowing that this was the last chance to experience human movement. Really, it's a kind of a prayer, a kind of a respectful engagement with yourself. So, see any of the mind's reactions? Terrible metaphor. She could have said something else. Whatever it is, whatever your mind does, that's all welcome. Coming back to when I ring the bell and the sound fades, you don't even have to think you're going somewhere. Just see how you want to move, how this body wants to express itself. Again, between 5 and 10 minutes. Stay really close to yourself. What do you want to find out about this body? Maybe it wants to do something. Whatever movement you're making, subtle or big, be total and wholehearted. It might be shyness, that's okay. wasn't the bell. one last window of many into the goal of the path. So I use the word deathless. This is another word that's used in the tradition. The realization of the deathless, that which is not born or dies. Which you can see, it's very tricky always in spiritual teachings, pointing to the goal. That the mind is likely to go one side or the other. It's likely to make a something out of it. No, it's the deathless. I've got to find the deathless. It's a nibbana. It's like it's a noun, as if it's a noun that we can get there and have it. Right. That's a tendency of spiritual traditions. Or the other tendency, the other extreme, is to say it's nothing. More a kind of a slightly the extreme of annihilation. There's nothing there. It's nothing. The middle way, which these teachings point always, it's always this fine, fine middle way. Deathlessness, or as one teacher points out, even nibbana, we tend in English to want to make a noun, it would be more accurate to put it in a verb. Nibbana-ing, right? It's not somewhere we're going to get to. It's a verb, it's an action, it's an active in that sense. Deathlessing, deathlessness-ing. Doesn't work so well, does it? So if you don't make it a noun, if your heart, mind, the chitta, can feel whatever it's drawn to, sometimes we feel or hear that whisper. We might call it to freedom. To that which is beyond birth and death, to unboundedness, to realization, authenticity, more and more authentically what we are, where there's no mediation anymore between between inner and outer. There isn't this buffer that has to keep mediating the world. But this last window is where the Buddha speaks about practice along the way. And he speaks about five spiritual faculties that develop as we practice. And we've been practicing those today. And then I'll get to the window part. And the five faculties, I couldn't remember them earlier, but this particular list, there are many lists and many beautiful qualities, but these particular five considered the kind of like the engine for awakening, the motor. It's like the motor. We kind of cultivate these five, and it's like a little motor, like the rocket kind of knows where it's heading. Right? It's not me becoming it, but there's that flame, that inspired flame that gets fanned, and the motor gets going for this. And the qualities are faith in the possibility of awakening. Not faith in something or someone, but faith in this is actually possible. And we get it for ourselves. It's not a belief or an idea. We get it for ourselves. Like, oh, yeah, when I attend in this way and practice in this way, it leads to a little bit more freedom or realness or something that we like, or else we wouldn't come back, right? Something we recognize. The faith becomes more and more verified, and the faith gets stronger in that this really is possible. Not just for some guys in North India all those times ago, but this really is possible for me. And that can grow and strengthen. It's not that you have to come in with a fiery faith. You may not. These things are growable. Faith, persistence, energy, the willingness to kind of put in the legwork, right? The energy to keep going. With it, in a sense, what choice do we have this life but to cultivate kindness and wisdom? Tell me something else you're going to do. I mean, we can do lots of things, right? We can have lots of experiences, of course. Life can be rich and beautiful. But what's it in the service of? The energy, the mindfulness. Always useful. the mindfulness, the samadhi, the firmness of the presence that we deepen in. Maybe you felt it a little bit more in the day. It's like we get a little bit more here, has this kind of firm, stable quality to the mind. We think of it as the body, but it's like the mind becomes a little less blow-aroundable. It doesn't just blow at every thought that goes, you're terrible. Might just still do that. We might have to work with those places, but there's a little bit more faith, a little bit more stability, a little bit more ballast. And wisdom. The last one is wisdom. That can discern the wisdom, not an intellectual wisdom necessarily, but the wisdom that can discern what pathways, what if I attend in that way, what leads onward, what leads in a good direction, and what does not. Yeah, if I space out and disappear, okay, it's not terrible, but it doesn't lead onward toward what I really love. So the wisdom, he says, these faculties get stronger. It's not like we have to come in with them. Don't worry for thinking, oh my God, I've barely got any of those. Right? They grow. It's not a self here who's going to get enlightened. It's these qualities grow. The motor deepens. We practice, we serve, we cultivate generosity, we do our work in our life, we serve, we make dinner for our neighbor, we do whatever we do, right? And we can sense, oh yeah, okay. These qualities can grow, they're growable, they're deepenable. And he says, the window here is that he says, and these five spiritual faculties, the place where they merge in the deathless. That's where they kind of, it comes together. And something is done. Something is done. We don't do it. Probably all of us have tried very hard at many, many things, including probably trying to be awake or enlightened. Right? But these qualities, keep faith with those, actually. They do. It seems to be true. And that we see that along the way. It's not like we necessarily finish our work, but along the way the path shows different places where certain things have dropped away, that no longer rearise certain patterns that have been the bane of our life or our mind. Sometimes in the path, yes, they seem to a bit stronger, right? Because they come to the surface. But after some time, if we keep hanging out, some of those things, oh yeah, I stopped doing that thing where I stopped, don't know, it's just dropped away. I stopped doing that thing where my brother can really wind me up. Just, I'm not trying to be stoic or clever or rise above it. Just doesn't stick anymore. Right? I'm not saying I'm there with my brother yet. That's quite advanced. With your family, of course, this is the real test. Right? But those kinds of things, some things don't stick in the same way. The citta is a little less sticky. All right, that's another one of the windows. It's the unsticking of the citta. It's like nothing is adhering to it. There's nothing for something to stick to. It can move through. And there's different things along the way. So it's not like we have to wait till we're fully realized. Along the way, if we keep hanging out, we'll see. We'll see changes. And if we don't, then, you know, after 5 or 10 years, we might want to speak to a teacher and say, you know what? Nothing's actually any different in my practice. Check it out. Sometimes, as the Dalai Lama, he says something like, well, if you sit every day for 30 minutes, he goes, that's great. He goes, well, that will just help you sort of stay where you are, not regress. Something like that. I'm sure he says it much nicer than that. Look it up. Don't take it from me. Something. It's like, yeah, it's great. You know, because my answer to the question somebody asked me earlier, they said, well, has the practice made any difference to you? And I said, well, if I consider where my life might have gone if I hadn't practiced, it doesn't look that great. That, you know, I don't know what would happen if I hadn't practiced. Right? That's one way, the via negativa. And yes, that's great love of the practice. I think I'll finish. see if anything remains to be said by me or you. I know Elizabeth's going to... Are you up for speaking about Dharma, Elizabeth? Great. Elizabeth will say a couple of words. Let's see. How should we finish? Let's take a breath together. Yeah, maybe I'll finish with this note. It's wherever is your spark of inspiration that brings you, like lets you be willing to sit on a cushion with your own heart, mind and body all day. that's some faith, actually. You might not think of yourself as someone with faith, but that's what it is, right? Faith in possibility. Let that spark, or it might be a fire for all I know, let it be fanned. Fan that flame of your love. Whatever way you put it, it doesn't have to fit in a Buddhist framework. It may be your love for the truth. It might be your love of God. It might be, oh, yes, something about the faculties emerging in the deathless. That really turns me on. It doesn't turn everyone on. Different windows. Turn us on. Switch us on. This engine. Fire those sparks. Probably you do. You might not need me to tell you, but often we forget the flame can be a little flickery sometimes and need support very often. Especially, well, in the beginning or when we're going through a difficult patch, which happens in the path at times. Right. Flame your flame. You know, get involved with things that light your heart, where people seem authentic in whatever realm or domain that might be, or spiritual or not spiritual. Doesn't matter. We recognize authenticity and realness when we see it. Follow that. Follow Dharma teachings if they speak to you. Look up Dharma Seed. Ah, somebody asked this morning. Is she still here? Yes. Who she could ask, if anyone here who is a little bit done more of this kind of insight meditation work, yeah, that was you, would be willing to chat at the end about resources that are available or things she can look at. Any of the old hands willing to hang around for 10 minutes to talk about anything? Great. Good. Great. Cup of tea downstairs and there'll be a chance to chat about that. Yes, may your love of truth and freedom and your care about suffering, your own and that of the world, may that ignite so that you can let go of what's not needed anymore and be well. Be well in yourself and with each other. Thank you for your practice. Thank you for coming. Thank you for staying. Something to commit, especially on a sunny day in March. Thank you to all the Cambridge people, past, present, who organized these days, to John and Jackie for beginning. Carrying the flame for many years, Elizabeth for her work. I'm not going to remember all the names, but Hamish, I know, and Diane. I can't remember that. Sorry, Diane. And there was, who else was out there this morning? You were. Katie, and anyone else from the crowd that helps organise here. Show yourself. Thank you to all of you and those that aren't here as well for making it happen. So we can practice and look more deeply together for our benefit, and may it be for the benefit of all beings everywhere. May it be so.
A few people hiding over there who helped, and over there. Thank you to everyone who helped. There's a lot that actually goes on behind the scenes. Like posters. I think a few